Oh, hey, everybody. Just wanted to dip in for a couple of minutes and talk about something that some feedback that I got from my last conversation about women. Listen, man, I get my coffee. I get that you're all a little frustrated at women sometimes. But you know, really, really try to avoid, and I've fallen prey for this too, so I'm not speaking from any place of perfection here, far from it. Try to avoid blaming individuals for the effect of a system. Like, you wouldn't go to 1950s Soviet communist Russia and say that the workers are lazy. You wouldn't go back to the days of slavery or across to Libya, where you can buy a human being in open-air slave markets post Hillary Clinton for $400. You wouldn't go to the slave and say, well, you're just unmotivated. Right? You wouldn't, you know, when the Beatles did that song, it's one for you, 19 for me. Hey, it's a tax, man. Well, that was because they were being taxed at a rate of 95%. Now, would you blame them then for reincorporating in Switzerland or whatever the hell they did, which Queen did, I think, and David Bowie did and so in a Montreux? Well, people respond to incentives. And one of the things that a corrupt and decadent system does is it gets us to turn on each other for the effects of the system. So focusing on the system rather than the individuals who've had all the wrong incentives, I think is important. And again, I've gotten angry at the individuals and so on, but I think it's important to do this. Because a question came up when I was sort of talking about the value of women. And somebody was saying, well, you know, but men statistically generally do better than women in most fields and so on. Okay, let's say that's true. I mean, there's evidence for it. Let's say that's true. Okay. I think it's important to talk about the contributions that women make to the world. And I know this goes a little bit against the grain and all of that, but just talk about the contributions that women make to the world. So men build the houses, but women make them beautiful. And you have to have shelter, of course, but having beautiful shelter is giving meaning to your shelter. You know, I had to go and run some errands today. And I went to a couple of stores. And, of course, you know, noticed, as I always do, that like 90% of the things in stores are for women to buy to beautify the world. In many ways, right? And this beautification of the world is something that women do as a whole. When I was a bachelor, you know, I mean, bachelors, what do we have? We have a giant TV and a futon, right? What do we have? Nothing on the wall, and right? And if you get married, most times you'll end up with a beautiful place. And that is good for the soul. That is good for the senses. We men tend to be very bare bones and very functional. And again, nothing wrong with that, but was it a friend of mine and I many years ago, we wrote a sort of quasi-script for a tongue-in-cheek, Spinal Tap-style documentary called Raised by Bachelors. And I just had a whole series of jokes about how unfunctional men are when it comes to these things. You know, it's like, well, he wouldn't do laundry, man, but what he would do is he would get some Febreze and spray me, or he'd have me get the dryer pads and just rub myself with them and all of that. And I'd go to school that way. And so we build houses, we build shelter for sure, but it's women who make them beautiful as a whole. And that beauty is really, really important in the world. And the other thing too, is that men do achieve a significant, if not downright staggering amount of things in the world. But why do we achieve these things? Right? It's like that old line from the Dead Poets Society, right? Why do men write poetry? To communicate the human condition? No. To master the language? No. To woo women? That's a good point. Why do we do what we do as men? Why do we exceed in our creativity and productivity? We do what we do as men, and we exceed in our creativity and productivity for the sake of women. Male excellence and female desirability are two sides of the same coin. They really are the same thing. Now, if somebody said, I'll give you one side of the coin but not the other, would you be thrilled and feel wealthy? You would not. You would feel frustrated and annoyed. Like if somebody tore up a $100 bill, gave you one half, you wouldn't feel $50 richer. You'd feel like Solomon with the baby, right? Sorry, I'm just reading through The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. Boy, did you ever read that? Holy crap. What a wild book. And what a, well, anyway, talk about that another time. So the yin and the yang of the male and the female is really important to honor and respect both. And I get, you know, a lot of women will vote to replace men with the state. I get that. But a lot of women will replace women with pornography, right? So there is a degradation or devaluing of the other in both kinds of situations. And the sort of incel or beta rage towards women when they don't find themselves very attracted to you for a wide variety of reasons, some good, some bad, is, I think it's important to try and steer clear of that. Women are as men have chosen them to be. Right? Men are as women have chosen them to be. Women are as men have chosen them to be in the vicissitudes and necessities of human survival in a harsh and ugly world. For most of our evolution, we chose women to have their characteristics because that's what worked. Women fundamentally work, are a massive plus, and are equal to men in the results of choices made, evolutionarily speaking. Women are perfect. Men are perfect. Evolution can't have it any other way, particularly when we have a species as successful as we are. And the success of our species is nothing compared to what it will be in a stateless society, in a voluntary, moral society. And women are perfect. Now, if women are corrupted by the state with bribery and debt and indoctrination and so on, yeah. So women tend to be a little bit more, they tend to rate a little bit higher in the trait called agreeableness. It's one of the big five personality traits. And we can understand why. Because men compete with each other, but women need each other's support to raise children. So men go out and compete with each other for women. We compete with each other for the best land, the best food, the best houses, the best game, best hunting, whatever, right? But women, when they're raising children, tend to act in a much more conformist or crowd-pleasing kind of manner, because you kind of had to please the crowd. When you had more children than you could possibly keep track of or take care of, you needed everybody's eyes on your kids, so you had to kind of get along. That's a beautiful thing that women do, and it's the reason why we're all alive. The reason why we're all alive is because women score high on the trait agreeableness. That's a beautiful aspect of women. Now, that trait agreeableness does make, I think, women a little bit more susceptible to propaganda, which is why propaganda is so often focused upon women. But it's only a weakness because of the state. It's not a weakness because women have a deficiency. Because if it was a weakness, it would have been weeded out, evolutionarily speaking, tens or hundreds of thousands of years ago. Men have a weakness. I mean, I've talked about the male weakness of status, the female weakness of vanity. But the female weakness of vanity is only a weakness because of the state. It's not a weakness to be very concerned about your appearance when your appearance is essential for the success of your reproductive strategy called getting a guy with good access to resources or ability to create resources. There's nothing wrong with that. It's perfectly wonderful that women tend to score higher in agreeableness than men do. But men have the recoil of bitterness, right, don't we? Just, you know, sorry, ladies, but feel free to eavesdrop, but this is a bit of a male-to-male conversation, right? So we have the recoil called bitterness, the avoidance mechanism called bitterness. I was explaining this to my daughter the other day. I said, men only have so many rejections in them, like capacity to be rejected. So a man will ask a girl out, a boy will ask a girl out when she's a bit higher than the best he thinks he can get, right? Because just give it a shot, roll the dice, right? But the problem is, if a boy asks a girl out and gets rejected, he can live with it, right? He's still got some quivers in the arrow, so to speak. He can live with it. It's painful. It's difficult. And there's an existential pain and difficulty to being rejected by women, as I talked about many years ago in Orlando, which is we then don't get to pass on our genes and we don't get to continue as a evolutionarily speaking. So a boy will ask a girl out, and if he's rejected, not the end of the world, right? Not the end of the world. So then he'll go and ask another. Maybe he'll shave his expectations down a little bit and he'll go for another girl. If she rejects him, okay, once is an accident, twice might be a pattern. So he'll adjust his sights, so to speak, and maybe go down a rung or two, and he'll ask another girl out. And like only a sociopath or a psychopath doesn't care about rejection, right? So then if it's three times, you start to worry. You start to get concerned. Now, the problem is when it starts to become, let's say, four or five times you've asked out girls and they say no, then what happens is you're out of arrows, so to speak. And what I mean by that is, I think we've all been there at one time or another, in one way or another. What happens then is you start to feel very insecure about your desirability. And that's tough, right? Because confidence is attractive. And if you get rejected a lot, then you lose confidence. And that's what I mean when I say a man only has so many rejections in him before he kind of caves in. And we have to be very careful. You know, like if you're out hunting and you only have five arrows, you can't just shoot wildly, right? You can sneak up as close as you can. You got to be really careful because you only got five arrows. Some thick wood where you can't find the arrows or whatever, right? I mean, we find enough of these arrowheads around that we know that the indigenous population of North America lost them like crazy. So you got to be really careful. So a man only has so many rejections in him before he's tempted by the great sin of bitterness. Something's wrong with women. Something's wrong with society. Well, yeah, something's wrong with society for sure, but that's always been the case for the most part, right? If you think we're living in the most corrupt society, you haven't studied history really at all. I mean, this is not... We're able to have this conversation, right? It's not that bad relative to society as a whole. So, or societies in the past, societies across the world, much worse. So I think it's important when you look back on your life, if you feel this bitterness and this exhaustion and this hostility and this caustic aggression, particularly towards dating or marriage or women, I think that it's really important to say to yourself, if I've been rejected, I have to try again. And I have to find a way to be enthusiastic, to be confident, to be positive, to be engaging. Everybody knows that each gender has been corrupted by a culture that itself has been corrupted by politics. And we're all looking for that light, that gleam, that glimpse, that sunburst, that fireball, whatever lights up the night sky, that's something we can guide ourselves by. If you've ever been lost in the woods and you know how to navigate by the stars and it's really cloudy, you're just desperate for a break in the clouds so that you can find the stars that can get you home. I think it's important to recalibrate and reboot. And men also get corrupted by having unrealistic standards of female beauty around. That's really important. I mean, women complain about this, you know, unrealistic standards of beauty and so on. But I watched a video the other day, which was a woman who's, I think, somewhat of an expert in the field, talking about all the plastic surgeries she thinks Kylie Jenner had. Whether she did or didn't, I don't know, but it's just really kind of interesting. And I saw that there's this woman with a very sort of angular jaw from the show Stranger Things, this girl, I don't know if she's a girl or a woman, she's pretty young. And there was somebody saying, you know, here's what I would do to her face. And she's a beautiful girl, right? Solid 9, right? She said, oh, here's what I would change. And I get that. And, you know, every time in a movie a man takes off his shirt, all the guys are like, hey, does he have abs? Oh, God, does he have abs? Oh, do I have to do more sit-ups? And I get we have all these unrealistic beauty standards, but this regular conveyor belt of physical perfection that comes along in front of the male gaze. I mean, everything from models to pornography to, like, you name it, right? Movie stars and actresses, right? This constant perfection that rolls in front gives us a very strange sense of the bell curve of female attractiveness, right? If you're just looking at the top, and these are literally the top 1 in 100,000 women who just have the right curves, who have the right face, who have the right skin, the top 1 in 100,000 women, and models as a whole, maybe the top 1 in 10,000 women. So we're talking extraordinarily low ratios. And if you just look at that, and this is most of what you see, and you've got to ask yourself over the course of your, like the last year, over the course of your life, how many statistically virtually impossible women have you been exposed to as opposed to the average that's out there? Have you recalibrated? Like if you basically said, okay, every woman is beautiful because 95% of the women I see are digital or in a movie or whatever it is, and then does it feel like you're really sacrificing to dip down? And that's going to give you that level of rejection that is going to kill your confidence and have you go down this sort of shame spiral or guilt spiral or lack of confidence spiral, like if you get rejected a bunch of times and then you have less confidence, and because you have less confidence, you're more likely to be rejected and all that kind of stuff. So I do think that's really important to try and find a way to let go of that bitterness, to not be programmed, to find a good, solid, sensible woman to found a family with and continue your beautiful genetics with. I think that's really important. And bitterness and ridiculous standards and letting rejection cause you to retreat. See, there's a retreat now that really wasn't possible in the past, right? Like 95% of people got married in the past. So there was no retreat. There was no such thing really as an incel other than, you know, maybe some people would go into the clergy or something. But there was no retreat possible in the past. And so now we have this world where you can quit the battlefield. You can get off the sexual market merry-go-round, you can just ghost the world. That wasn't an option for your ancestors, which is why you have ancestors and why you exist, because they did not quit the battle. They did not let bitterness and rejection and frustration and annoyance and politics exclude them from love, marriage, fatherhood. They just soldiered on. And this is at a time when women had no real access to dental care. Smallpox ravaged sometimes a quarter of the population. And women didn't have Pilates. They didn't have Botox. And so you look for qualities of character and you would not rest until you were able to achieve and gain those qualities of character. So I do think it's time to kind of shake that stuff off, to confront your bitterness, which is a fear that you'll never be loved. I fear that you're unlovable. And then if you feel unlovable, I mean, that's very painful, obviously. If you feel unlovable, then you can either, of course, work very hard to try and improve your level of attractiveness, both physical, emotional, and spiritual, and intellectual, and so on. Or you can damn the system you can damn the women, you can like damn all of this stuff. And again, you tell me a time in history when people weren't propagandized. Oh, well, if I go back, you know, a couple of hundred years and all that. It's okay. Well, there was a lot of propaganda going on there around kings and queens and religion and so on. There's a lot of propaganda. And so the fact that we have this individuation, this capacity to think and reason together, unprecedented in human history. So there is no golden time back in the past. And yes, there is a lot of corruption right now, absolutely. But I do think it's less as a whole than there has been throughout history. And in the West, it's still less than it is across the world. And the last thing I'll say, and I'll take your questions here, but I really wanted to get this across. The last thing I'll say is the propaganda that's aimed at women can be your absolute friend. You may end up, I don't want you to worship it like Moloch or something, but you can very easily, you know, shift your mindset to look at the propaganda that is aimed at women and say, thank you. Thank you for that. So, you know, the people who remained unvaccinated, oh man, people who remained unvaccinated have survived one of the biggest psychological assaults in human history. My God, every direction, every angle, and that can easily lure you into a kind of frustration and hatred, which is, you know, there are some people who may be having health effects from the vaccine. And, you know, it's like, well, you know, you didn't care about me when I was losing my job and couldn't travel and couldn't go to a restaurant and threatened in all these kinds of ways. But what it's done is it's put a lot of voltage through the needle in the haystack, right? Somebody who's been able to, I'm not just talking about the pro-vaccine stuff, but somebody who's actually been able to resist the propaganda fired at them is a person of such strength of character that if they're willing, you put a ring on it and make her yours. So the propaganda has eliminated significant portions of the population who've fallen for it, and we can say with love and respect and affection that we hope that they'll start to think for themselves and so on, and we're there for them if they want to and so on. But boy, talk about putting 50,000 watts on the needle in the haystack, because a person who has survived the propaganda, a person who has still managed to be able to think for themselves, will be so easy to identify that it is a godsend to those who are looking for the Godhead of human thought. So you can look at and say, okay, 99 women out of 100, 49 women out of 50, 24 women out of 25, you know, 10 out of 15, whatever the ratio is, swallowed up by the propaganda. Well, guess what? So have the men. But when you can find the person who has survived this onslaught, wow, what a powerful thing. So if you simply look at the people who have been rendered unsuitable by propaganda to anybody who thinks for himself, you can get frustrated and just stare at that, but those aren't the people for you if you think for yourself. And society has made it extraordinarily obvious that they're not the person for you if you think for yourself. Society has done you a huge favor by highlighting and pointing out exactly what you need to look for to find the woman of your dreams. And then love the feminine, embrace the beauty that the feminine can bring to your life, and love the strength of character it takes to survive that propaganda, in particular because it's a little bit harder for women to survive that than men. But the price that we men pay for surviving propaganda is isolation, bitterness, and rejection of our future. So, strengths and weaknesses. We are evolved to bring beauty in a state of freedom. We hope to use that beauty to achieve a state of freedom, but until we do, keep looking for that beauty wherever you can, because it will be there. All right, let me just get to your questions. Thank you very much. How do you choose what to talk about? Well, I mean, I'm very wired into the community as a whole and love the questions and comments that you all bring to me. So, I am more frustrated with the manosphere. It acts like a death cult. So the manosphere is the people who've been seduced by the dark side of bitterness and rejection. And some of it I can really sympathize with. A lot of it I can really sympathize with. But you see, that's the great temptation. That's what the devil himself does. The devil himself will tempt you with rejection to the point where he can get you to reject your future. I mean, my God. For me to get to where I am doing this conversation, do you know how much rejection I've had to overcome? When I was in grade 8, my teacher read my novel to the class. I just started this novel. It's a science fiction novel called By the Light of an Alien Sun. She started reading it to the class, and it was quite funny, and there was a girl in it I liked, and it was all very innocent and cute and all of that. But there was really a beautiful thing. I was in plays in high school, and then I went to university, acted like crazy, and was the director's first choice for all the plays that were going on to be the lead. I did Harold Pinter, I did Chekhov, I did just a wide variety of of plays. I did my Shakespeare. I played Macbeth. And I went to theater school, and they loved me for the first couple of months, and then they found out about my politics, although I didn't realize this at the time. They just hated me. And, you know, I've been rejected by agents. I've been rejected by theater people. I've been rejected by investors. I've been rejected, obviously, by social media platforms. I mean, and the great temptation, of course, is to, when you passionately love something, that's a great threat to the world. If you expose and you have your heart open, you just want to share what you love in the world, that creates great terror for a hierarchy, creates great terror for those who want to rule us. It's very hard to rule somebody who's very passionately in love with some positive aspect of life. You know, in order to save you, they have to damn you first. They have to get you in a state of fear and anxiety and loss. And I you know, so for instance, when I got involved in my first really professional writing program, my first writing teacher, oh, you're not a writer. I don't know what this is. I don't even know if this is even a book. I don't know what to make of any of this and blah, 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 blah. You know, it's kind of tough. I spent a whole year sending out short stories and all of that, trying to get things published, and rejection, 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 rejection. It's just the way that things are. I had a friend of mine knew a woman who was a literary agent, and I gave her Just Poor, and she just had, you know, scathing contempt and irrational, at least it seemed to me at the time, irrational hatred for the book. And I think the book is a complete joy. And this disconnect, right, between what I loved and what the world hated, which was the same thing, right? Now, if I had remembered my Jesus and the Bible, I would have been a little bit easier off in understanding this. And, you know, and as far as rejection goes, you know, bomb threats, death threats, attacks upon the venues, deplatforming, priests getting attacked, the 911 being called by people who were hosting my venues, and the police not even showing up. I was, wild. 911, they won't even show up. Endless attacks in the media. And so the amount of rejection, and what's the rejection for? The rejection is there to tempt you into bitterness, rage, frustration, hostility, to turn your heart black with bruises. Pound people enough, pound people enough. And you turn them darker and darker every time you pound them. Their heart gets blacker and blacker, and eventually they just boil over. And you join the devils then, right? That's what happens. Just reject, attack, reject, attack, reject, attack. And we've all faced this. Those of us, and everyone in this conversation, we all think for ourselves, we all reason for ourselves, we all come to conclusions based on reason and evidence that society finds unpalatable, or rather the hard leftists find unpalatable, and program people that way. So, and the point of parading endless female perfection in front of you is to raise your standards to the point where you continually get rejected. Because you continually get rejected, you then become black-hearted, bitter, frustrated, and angry, become even less attractive, and give up the fight to have a family. It's a pretty good way of doing it, right? So, if I had allowed that, you know, literally, it's like an endless tidal wave of just black-hearted tsunami hell that just comes down on you when you think for yourself and you reason from first principles, and I'm far from the first. Hopefully will be not totally close. Hopefully I am totally close to the last, but hopefully I'm closer to the last than I am the first, but I'm far from the first and far from the last to be attacked in this way, as is you, probably the case for you when you're in your personal life or talking about things with people in your life. So that's the temptation. They pound at your joy, they pound at your happiness, they pound at your passions to the point where, you know, bewildered, frustrated, broken, angry, you just fall out of the race, you fall prey to bitterness, you go dark. You go dark. It's just too hard, it's too brutal, it's too ugly. Because, you know, when you have beauty and you have love and you are beautiful and you bring beauty, and I think philosophy is beautiful, and when you bring beauty to the world, you find out just how ugly a lot of the world is. Very bewildering to me when this first happened. I remember very clearly sitting in a room like, what am I not getting? What am I not getting? What do I not understand about the world that this is what's going on? and that incomprehension and that bruised, endless pounding that you get, it's easy to fall into bitterness and anger, and whether this is from women or culture or society or the media or family or friends or whatever, right? They're trying to chase you and goad you and prod you into spitting up bile rather than singing an aria, so to speak. And trying to find a way to resist that is pretty tough. It's pretty tough. All right. Steph, I'm really glad you're saying this. So much of the manosphere lately seems to view women so one-dimensionally and without factoring in the impact of our culture and statism on them. The issue is the system. The issue is not the individuals. And there's nothing wrong with criticizing the individuals, nothing wrong with pointing out the falsehoods and so on, but let us always remember that it's the system that is corrupting people. All right, let's see here. What is the difference between ethics and morality? I find people constantly use the two words interchangeably. I don't have any firm idea of how they are different. So I have a definition of morality that's divided into five things. Universally preferable behavior, right? Respect for property rights, non-aggression principle. Aesthetically preferable actions, things like being on time and being polite and so on. And there's neutral actions, running for the bus doesn't matter. Aesthetically negative actions, being rude, divisive, sowing rumors and lying about people in a non-legal kind of fashion, and being late and all of that. And then there's the opposite of universally preferable behavior, universally banned behavior, rape, theft, assault, murder, fraud, and so on. So for me, morality is more around good and evil, and ethics are more around preferred behavior that cannot be enforced. So, for example, when I talk about APA, aesthetically preferable actions, being on time is aesthetically preferable. Because if you're constantly late, then you are wasting other people's time and you're showing a disrespect for them and, you know, all of that, right? It brings chaos and uncertainty to other people's lives. But you can't enforce that because you're not enforcing your lateness on them. They don't have to meet you. They can leave at any time. You're enforcing, if you're assaulting someone, you're enforcing your violence on them. But being on time can be universalized, but because it's not being enforced upon someone, and you can avoid it very easily by simply not making plans with people who are consistently late, it's not moral. So to me, ethics are more around aesthetically preferable actions, but not about good and evil. So that's my particular way. So let's see here. Steph, I'm trying to convince a friend that the government is the reason for the sexual marketplace being difficult for men. He called me a conspiracy theorist. How can I better drive home this point? Ah, yes. The magic words of reason dismissal. Yeah, so sophistry, which is the polar opposite of reason. Sophistry is largely concerned with inventing phrases that people can use to banish thought. Like holy water banishes the demon of reason, right? So what you want to do is you want to create words that whenever people feel anxiety or feel frustration or feel nervous about the direction of a particular argument, then you give them a word or a phrase that allows them to banish that line of questioning, that line of thinking. So racist is one, homophobic is another, Islamophobic is another. In this case, it's just a conspiracy theory. These are just magic words to wave away thought. They're not arguments. There's no evidence. It's just, here's a word that you can use when you're free-falling into anxiety because somebody's asking you to think a little bit. Somebody's doing the horror of asking you to think a little bit. Here's the get-out-of-jail-free card, which you can use to simply make all of that questioning go away. And one of those, of course, is conspiracy theorist, right? So you could just ask people to define, what does a conspiracy theory mean? Oh, it's a theory that people collude to achieve things. People in power collude to achieve things. I'm like, you don't think that people in power collude to achieve things? What are you talking about? There's an old quote from Adam Smith, which I'll brutalize, but it's something like, leaders of industry never ever meet together behind closed doors except to inflict punishment on the public, like price fixing or some negative thing to the public, right? So of course, rich and powerful people collude to gain and achieve their ends. Of course they do. Of course they do. I mean, anybody who thinks that rich and powerful people don't ever collude to achieve their ends or their goals, I don't even know what to say. So just somebody rejects that. So yeah, what is a conspiracy theorist? Is it a theory that people sometimes conspire to, I mean, we can see this. We can see the government conspiring with social media companies to ban questions or criticisms of their COVID response. And this is documented. This isn't even a, you know, there was a disinformation board that was being proposed. This whole thing of disinformation, which simply means things that interfere with our power. The idea that, I mean, that there's so much evidence, of course, that people in power collude to get what they want, that anybody who rejects that, I wouldn't even know what to say. I mean, that's just like saying to somebody who, they deny gravity, right? So, all right, so let's see here. Oh, little scrolly uppy here. What do you think about married women at work who were interested in me? I never engaged with that, tempting as it was. So a married woman at work who is interested in you is using you to express her rage against her husband. You are a boy toy that's used to pound her husband with, so to speak. She'll pound you to pound her husband. If you are a married woman or man and there's somebody showing interest in you, they're what's called a homewrecker, and they hate to see a happy marriage and therefore will have an affair with you in order to wreck and destroy your marriage, right? So they're single because they say, well, marriage is always a lie, but then they see happy marriages, so they try and insert themselves into those happy marriages to disrupt them so that they can get back to believing that marriage is a lie and so on, right? There was a chilling scene in a movie. It was called The Unbearable Lightness of Being. Basically, The Unbearable Lightness of Being Naked. And in it, there was a woman who seduces a married man, and long story short, he leaves his wife, he leaves his children, they're sobbing and crying, he goes to her apartment to be with her forever, and she's moved out. She just left him. No forwarding address. This is before internet, social media, couldn't find her. Well, because she did what she did, right? She wrecked the marriage. She wrecked the happy couple. She destroyed the marriage. The nihilistic sociopathy in her was satisfied, and she moved on to another victim. So anybody who wants to get involved with a married person is satanic. It's completely devilish. Now, if the marriage is bad, maybe you can wait till it's over and the smoke clears or whatever it is, but no, especially if there are kids involved. It's purely demonic to try and wreck a family for the sake of passing lusts. And the lust is really for the destruction of the family, not for anything else. Let's see here. They knew how depressed I was about losing my wife. Yeah. Well, then you have a vulnerability which they can exploit to get back at their husbands, right? The moment I stopped trying to impress the opposite sex and just be myself, I found it could be funny and charming. Everything else followed. Yeah, so I've said this before. Women don't want you to focus on them. Women want you to focus on winning things in the world. So the system popped into existence out of nowhere and arranged the incentive structure in favor of women in the marriage market. Women played no role. Oh, so you're then angry, bitter, bit of a jerk, right? Right, so if you're going to say to me, if I say to you, focus on the system, not the individuals, and you're saying, oh, women play no role in the system, I said, I mean, you probably heard me, or maybe this was after you typed this. I said, yes, it's perfectly fine to valid and criticize belief systems, to criticize individuals and so on. Yes, yes, women played a role. No question. This is proven mathematically, economically speaking, that when women get the vote, so spending on the welfare state, spending on healthcare, spending on old age pensions go through the roof. The vast majority of the expansion in state spending is the result of women voting. Absolutely. No question. Which means what? It means women, like men, fall prey to temptation. If a woman gets married to a man, has children with a man, and the man leaves her, what does she do? How is she going to feed her kids? Now, if the state comes along and gives her money, then she doesn't have to worry about it, feeding her kids, that is, and then she doesn't really have to worry about finding a quality man, right? But if you have hungry children and you're facing eviction in the winter in the cold, and someone gives you a check for $100,000, which is basically what a woman on welfare with two kids gets about $100K worth of salary a year because she doesn't pay taxes on the welfare state income, right? She gets free health care and subsidized housing and groceries and so on. It's about $100,000. At least it was, I don't know, 6 or 7 years ago when I did the presentation. More now, I suppose, with inflation. So your kids are hungry. One of them might be ill. And you're facing eviction in February in Chicago. And someone gives you a check for $100,000. What are you going to do? Come on. What are you going to do? Are you going to say, no, I will not take this $100,000 because taxation is theft? You take the money. I'd take the money. That's the problem. Asking people to give up $100,000 of free money for the sake of principle, it's not going to happen. The incentives are so skewed that, yes, women will vote for men who offer them free stuff. Yes, women are programmed to respond positively to men offering them gifts. Absolutely. And men corrupt the living hell out of women by paying for OnlyFans and simping with, I mean, there's some of these women are earning $1 million a month to show their butts. And not just the curves either, but the in through the outdoor part. So you tell me how many women, and let's say that they don't go full proctologist in their pictures, they just show nudes or whatever, right? $1 million a month. Is that the state? No, it's not the state. That's men. It's men. Pornography industry exists because of men, in general. I mean, I know women use it and all that too, but in general, it got started because of men. And the number of women who have debased themselves to do sex shows and all of that and have stuff out there forever on the internet because men will pay them. I mean, it's the prostitution John question, right? Say, well, women prostitute themselves for money. It's like, not if they're not getting paid, they don't. And who's paying them? Men. So, of course women have voted for this, but the incentives are so skewed that if you say to someone who's not been healthy and is sick and needs insulin and needs various medicines and health care to the tune of, I don't know, 10 grand a month, whatever it is, right? And you say, well, you know, we're going to get rid of socialized medicine because it's inefficient and it's bad for the next generation and it's too expensive and it's immoral, and right? Is that person going to say, yeah, no, I'll take on that 10 grand a month for the sake of an abstract principle? It's asking way too much. The temptation is too great. If the temptation could be resisted, I wouldn't be a voluntarist. The imbalance is so insane, the temptation is so great, that it can't be resisted. So, I knew one guy who resisted. Yeah, okay, absolutely. 1 in 1,000 people will be able to resist it. But they generally tend to be the people who have the fewest practical issues to deal with. If you are a woman now, right, you've got, I don't know, let's say you've got 3 kids by 3 different men. Somebody comes along and says, yeah, I'm sorry, we're going to have to eliminate the welfare state. well, who's going to take care of my kids? All these things, right? Do you feel that you have a practical choice? Now, the welfare state will end, without a doubt. I mean, it's either a soft landing or a hard landing. Trump was the hope for the soft landing. People have chosen the hard landing. So, I mean, the welfare state's going to end, and when the welfare state ends, people will find a way to move on. They'll find a way to move on, right? Women will all pool together, or single moms will pool together, collect together, and they'll all watch each other's kids, and they'll get jobs, or they'll find men who will take care of them by being more pleasant and positive. Women, people will adapt. But nobody wants to go through that voluntarily by choice, right? It's like chemo. You don't want it unless you're sick, right? If you have cancer. So, yes, women have participated in this system, for sure. Men have participated in the system. Women have participated in the system. But you tell me somebody who's facing eviction into the snowbank, whose kids are sick and hungry, who's going to tear up a $100,000 check. The incentives are just too overwhelming. And again, remember, we're not abstract beings unless we stay alive. Somebody says, I still have a day job, but I'm currently writing a number of books. I've worked on this every day for the last few months. Oh, good for you. I have some rough content, but editing isn't a problem. What would you say to a new writer? I'm currently reading UPB in a hard copy. So, everything that can be cut should be cut. Everything that could be cut should be cut. If the story can survive without something, do your best to cut it. Have every sentence be something that somebody could read in isolation, like on a fortune cookie, and it would mean something to them. It would be important in some way to them. Don't waste your reader's time. Try to get to the point as quickly as possible, but recognize that if it's strong medicine, a little sugar, a little entertainment, a little humor is important. There are some people who will jump into ice-cold water. There are other people who ease themselves in. That's more my particular taste. So at the beginning of Universally Preferable Behavior, I have to address the simple fact that I claim to have found the Holy Grail or invented the Holy Grail of philosophy, a rational proof of secular ethics. No God, no government. The odds of me doing that are extraordinarily low. It's an absurd claim to make, because everybody's been looking for this for thousands and thousands of years. I claim to have created and produced it. So I have to address that first and foremost. Because if I'm just like, oh, I've got the answer, blah, 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 without recognizing that it's an astounding and absurd almost claim to make. Especially because I'm not like a PhD from Harvard philosopher guy. I have a graduate degree, but, you know, I wasn't working as a philosopher when I did it. So, I mean, but then neither was Einstein working as a physicist when he did his thing, right? So, yeah, be aware of how your stuff is landing to the average person. And remember that if you're writing at a sophisticated level, and that's not even super sophisticated, if you're writing at a sophisticated level, this is level 7 and above of the 7 levels of literacy. Then you're writing for 2% of the population, and just recognize that it's the 2% that make things happen. But remember to not aim for the middle, otherwise you'll have to dumb it down to finger puppets. All right. What is the difference between complaining and talking about something that bothers you? Well, when you talk about something that bothers you, then one of two situations happen. It's a passing thing or it's a permanent thing. In other words, it's something that happened once. Like, oh, we stopped in this town in the middle of Bulgaria and had a really bad meal and the waiter was rude and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, we're never going. So that's just a once, like a story, right? Now, if it's something that's repetitive, though, then one of two things needs to occur. Either you fix the environment or you fix yourself. Right? You fix the environment or you fix yourself. Now, I play board games with friends, and in the board games, there are dice rolls. And if the dice rolls are going good, I feel good. If the dice rolls are going badly, I can. It's not a big thing, but I get a little annoyed, right? At times. And my daughter helped me with this, right? She said, well, you can't change the dice rolls, but you can change your feelings about the dice rolls and focus more on the fun you're having with your friends than whether you win or lose with your friends. She's perfectly right. So I've been working, and with some success, to just say, yeah, it matters more that I'm having fun with my friends than I'm like, winning with my friends, right? The winning is the having fun, right? But now I can afford that because I'm in my 50s, right? It was much more important to win when I was younger. Now it's more important to enrich the world as best I can. So there's nothing wrong with complaining and talking about something that bothers you, but either the fault is in the world or the fault is in yourself. I mean, maybe it's some combo of the two, but then you have to work to deal with it. Complaints are there to be solved and resolved. And if you're not solving and resolving them, then it's going to get pretty exhausting, right? All right. Yeah, what are international trade deals after all? Right, exactly. But collusions between those in power. The Geneva Convention, which, you know, used to apply to medical procedures pre-COVID, also was a collusion, right? Doesn't always have to be bad. Hey, Steph, does guilt ever leave being caused by infidelity in a relationship? All I can think is to use it as fuel to never do it again and be a better person. But the guilt and what if is sure powerful. Yeah. So when you have, I was talking about this with the guy with the Russian wife yesterday. God, only yesterday. So when you make a moral error, the great temptation for you, and in particular for those around you, is to give you the singular weight of holding it. Like you are just as an atomized, isolated, autonomous individual, just made a terrible decision independent of everyone else around you, right? Now, let's say that you're in a marriage, right? It's infidelity, right? So in a marriage, you will not cheat if your marriage is going well. So if your marriage is going badly, your friends should notice, your family should notice, and they should sit you down and talk about it with you and try and figure out ways to improve the marriage, suggest counseling, suggest books to read, suggest exercises to do, sit down with you. Like, this is the scene Goodfellas, right? Where he's like, the thugs, even the mafia does this, right? The thugs sit down with Henry, I think his name is, and say, you know, you've got this piece on the side, but this is your family. You can't leave your family. You've got to get back to your wife. You got, like, they're just like, here are the rules. You got to deal with it. So if you make a big error, a big moral error, like cheating, then it's not just you. We are all collectively responsible for moral decisions. Now, of course, you make the final decision, but I'm not trying to collectivize moral responsibility. But what I am saying is that people who are in your life who claim to love you, this is the requirement, that they claim to love you, they claim to care about you. Okay, well, if your marriage is going badly, then either you tell them and they then have to step up and deal with it because they care about you, or they notice and sit down with you and say, you know, you've seemed kind of unhappy. I've seen you with your wife, that you guys don't seem to be clicking too well. What's going on? What can I listen to? How can I help? And blah, 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 right? See, we look at ourselves as atomized moral titans who carry the world on our shoulder, and it's all up to us and no one else has anything to do with it. And there's a sort of preciousness and in a sense, a kind of narcissism involved in that. You know, people say to me, I still get these emails, why aren't you doing politics anymore? You were so good at doing politics. It's like, because when I was deplatformed, people chose not to follow me to new platforms. So I'm not going to stick my neck out and take risks for people who can't be bothered to go one website over and follow me there, right? So people sit there and say to me, well, Steph, why did you not continue to do politics, as if I'm just making that decision in isolation with nothing else going on around me. Nothing else. It's just me in the void, in the dark, in that Dostoevskian square foot of interstellar space with no outside effects or influences. It's like, well, no, because when I got deplatformed, 5% of people followed me to new platforms. It's like, okay, doing politics is risky. There's a lot of blowback. It's dangerous. So if people, and, you know, I don't even think I'm mad at this. It's just a fact, right? But if people are like, oh, yeah, no, it's really good that Steph is totally letting it hang out there and taking all of these risks and dealing with all of these dangers. Oh, he got deplatformed. Oh, is he on a new website? Oh, man. That's a lot of work, man. I don't really want to do that much work. It's like, okay, well, look, fantastic. Thank you for that information. Like, that's wonderful. So I don't sit there and say, well, I made a decision to not do politics anymore, in a completely isolated fashion. No, morality is a conversation. So if you ended up cheating, the question is, the people in your life who love you, including your wife, why did they not sit down with you and try to help you so that you didn't end up in this situation? So I'll give you another example, right? So somebody who's an alcoholic. They're an alcoholic. Say they're married, right? This is a man's married to a wife. He's an alcoholic. She's not. But he's just an alcoholic. It's like, no. She chose him knowing he drank. She bought him alcohol. She covered for him at work. She drove him places. She, you know, called in sick for him when he was sick and hungover and said he was unwell. And right. So his alcoholism is relational. It's not just him isolated. So when you look at your infidelity, you want to take all that guilt on yourself so you don't have to look at your relationships and say, how could you guys let me do this? How could you guys let me do this? So for married guys, here's the thing, right? So you're married, right? And when you're married, you want to be comfortable. And that's fine while you're home. You want to be comfortable and you also want to go out. Now, being comfortable and going out, these are matter and antimatter to a wife's eye. So if you're comfortable, you can't go out. If you're going out, you can't be comfortable. So my wife will be like, so you'll change your pants, right? I'll be like, well, these are comfortable. She says, I know. That's the problem. Don't go out in track shorts. We go into a pretty nice place. So go put some nice pants on. But they're not as comfortable. I know, right? So that's just a reality, right? So how I appear in public in my clothing choices has something to do with the people in my life, right? So my daughter's just going through this phase where she's starting to really care about her appearance, which is wonderful and is exactly the right timing and all that. So good for her. So if people didn't help you in your life, if your marriage is going badly, if you're not getting along, if you're tempted by the fruit of another, as the old song goes, right? Squeeze did a fantastic version of that. So if you're tempted by the fruit of another and you end up cheating, if you take that entire moral weight on yourself, you're doing that so that you don't ask the people around you, how could you let this happen to me? And then they'll, because you know what they'll say, if they're jerks, right? If they're jerks, they'll say, hey man, you didn't tell me, you made that choice, don't try and dump your guilt on me. I had nothing to do with it. It's like, okay, well, you have nothing to do with my life. If nothing to do with protecting me or watching my back or giving me good advice or caring about how my life's going, then fuck off. Right? If you won't take any ownership for not helping me, right? Maybe you did talk about it with your friend and they just didn't really help you, or maybe you didn't talk about it, but they didn't notice or ask you. Okay, well, if you don't even notice when I'm miserable and facing an affair and racked with guilt, and like, if you don't even notice that, then what the hell are you doing in my life, right? Have expectations for others that they help you with your moral issues and also help them with their moral issues too. That's a two-way street, right? 360. So the reason we hold on to our guilt is so that we don't question others for failing to help us in these things, right? As I said this last night, I almost married the wrong woman. I was real close to marrying the wrong woman. It would have ruined my life. How many people helped me out? Well, they ain't around anymore. So, all right, see here. I have found that the most rare, precious, and profound thing in life is the moment someone shares a deeply personal thing with me. Oh, absolutely. It's a beautiful and wonderful thing. And it's, I mean, I have this, I'm truly honored, and I say this on the show all the time, I'm truly honored by this. I'm truly honored by people who open up their hearts, open up their lives, open up their histories to me in conversation with these, in the call-in shows that I do, with the listener convos that I do. I'm truly, deeply honored by that. And you understand, if we do that, we're unbeatable. Like, to keep us isolated and fragmented and blaming ourselves and atomized and all of that without a community that cares about us, without people who watch our backs and who we watch their backs, and we're easy to push around, we're easy to manipulate, right? If you're facing a phalanx of people arm in arm who really care about each other, you can't get through. You know, the exploiters, the sociopaths, the borderlines, the neurotics, the narcissists, all the people who are just kind of crazy, they need you isolated. Which is why it's so often the case that when you get involved with a dysfunctional person, they isolate you from those around you, right? They need you isolated. And I'm saying, no. Be united and knit with your community and have an expectation of that. and you will be much, much stronger. When I attempt to talk to my friend about stuff like his marriage or parenting, he responds with one-syllable words. I tried approaching his wife about yelling at their kids, and she told me her and my friend will only remain my friends if I never bring up parenting. Right. I mean, it's a very sad thing. I can't tell you what to do with that, of course. I wouldn't be friends with someone who wouldn't talk about his life. I wouldn't be friends with someone where there was a big black spot where I just couldn't talk about stuff that was important. And you say, oh, but for the sake of the kids and this and that and the other. Look, I personally don't think you're doing any favors to the kids by staying friends with people who are yelling at the kids. And it's not a friendship if he won't talk to you. It's not. But what it means is that better friends won't come along because this is your standard, right? Changing platforms and updating my subscription was painless. I waste money on Netflix. Why not invest money in philosophy? Oh, yeah, there was a question I wanted to ask you. Thank you for bringing this up. It's a question I wanted to ask you. This is as a whole, right? There are people on the stream here. So of the people who are following me, but this is true for most people on the internet, but for the people who are following me, not that many actually support financially or that way, right? And I guess my question is, and this isn't like shaking my fist like, why, but I'm genuinely curious. Is there something that I could do better, that I could do more of, that I could commit more to, some value that I could provide to you that would have you tip over into supporting what it is that I do? Because, you know, all of this stuff costs sometimes a fairly ungodly amount of money. So is there something that would tip the balance for you in terms of supporting the show, right? freedomain.com/donate, freedomain.locals.com. Is there something that I could do that would, or is there something you're like, ooh, if it only do this? Now, if it's going back to politics, can't really help you, unless, of course, the audience swells enormously. But is there something, because you like what I'm doing, we've got lots of people on the live stream, is there something that I could do that would help you to make the decision to, in a sense, put your money where your ears are, so to speak, and support what it is that I do? And, I mean, this is not a hostile question. It's a very open-ended, love to figure out what the issue is that is a block for some people in terms of supporting. So I'll go through a couple more questions, and then I'll get down to any answers around that. And I really would appreciate knowing. It's not a hostile thing at all. I'm genuinely curious. Somebody says, you're like my favorite priest. You say what needs to be said, despite the audience gasping. Well, I've always said my business plan is make friends, challenge friends, make friends, break friends. Get an audience, annoy the audience. That's just the way it is. Somebody says about changing platforms and updating my subscription. Same thinking here. I had my girlfriend get it for me as a gift. Yeah, so changing platforms and updating your subscription is 5-10 minutes. You know, 10 bucks a month or whatever, 30 cents a day. That's like two lattes a month, right? It's just a question, right? Is the value that I provide not 10 bucks a month or 20 bucks a month or whatever it is? In which case, let me know what I can do that would be providing that kind of value, because I'm certainly committed to providing value to the audience. There are values that I provide that are intangible, and then there are values which, you know, cost me money and, of course, reputation. Has been pretty badly attacked and so on. So, yeah, I'm just curious what I can do that would help you to tip over into supporting what it is that I do. All right. If you want to email me, you can email me at Colin at freedomain.com. If you hear this later and, again, genuinely curious about what the barriers are or what I could do to provide enough value that you would support what I do financially, because that would be very helpful to me and very positive for me. And I would like to expand the resources that I can use to produce shows and do more research, maybe some more documentaries and so on. But again, that's all very expensive. So, and of course, I didn't charge for my documentaries and all of that. So, ashamed to admit it, but for me, the tipping point was when you changed it up to certain things being supporter only. Yeah, see, this is the thing, too. So people are, you know, saying, well, where are the call-in shows? And it's like, well, I'm still releasing call-in shows. But my gosh, let me just see here. There are, close to 200 call-in shows or so that are in the, maybe 175 call-in shows that are in the subscriber shows section. So yeah, the stuff that's just really too wild and too hot for the mainstream. So let's see here. I miss your old podcast where you'd pick a topic and talk about it for an hour or so. It doesn't have to be politics necessarily. For example, your Truth About series of podcasts. Yes, I think that's great. I did choose to write a new book, which was really time consuming, as you can imagine. And I know that people have really enjoyed that book. You can get it at freedomain.locals.com. So if you'd like more Truth About, just let me know. If you've listened to more than 100 shows and not supported, thank you for being a freeloader. Well, you know, I do sort of talk about voluntarism and exchanging value for value. So I think it's part of the general comments of the show, and along with the it's in line with the values, I think, that we talk about as a whole. Let's see here. I remember seeing the Hong Kong Fight for Freedom trailer on YouTube back in the day and immediately making a donation on PayPal. Those were the days. Well, again, still very easy to make a donation, so. Let's see here. For me, not contributing in the past was due to being used to the internet stuff being free. When you left, I realized how important you were and decided to contribute. Well, thank you. Appreciate that. Let's see here. Thanks, Steph, for doing what you do. I appreciate that. And if you do a pray, it's a game live stream, I'll donate an additional $100 for what I can afford. Well, I appreciate that thought. I really don't like to think of myself as a piece of meat for sale for $100. So if I'm providing value in what I'm doing and you're watching, I think asking me to, in a sense, do tricks is a bit of a diminishment for what we can do. So let's see here. I really miss your movie reviews. No, I'm still doing movie reviews. I'm doing them with my daughter. So you can find. See, FDRpodcast.com, FDRpodcast.com, and just do a search. Movie reviews, and you can get all my movie reviews. Let's see here. How to further the cause of peace and freedom. Besides being the best, happiest person can be, besides being good to my children, I want to devote my life to this stuff. What to do? Go public, make the arguments in as entertaining and engaging a fashion as possible, and I'm sure you'll be fine. I started donating when we started playing Among Us together. Unmatched value. That's very kind. It's very kind. It is. I was actually just playing tonight. My daughter set up a game with some friends. We were playing tonight just before the show. So let's see here. Come on, listeners, help him out. Yeah, I think I've certainly provided enough value for that. I mean, it's funny, you know. I mean, it's a funny thing to be on this side. You know, I don't really lift the lid too much about what it's being on this side of the camera. But I will literally get messages from people who say, you know, you saved my life, I met my wife, I stopped hitting my kids, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, there's a wonderful, wonderful message to get and mean the world to me. And I thank everyone who sends them in and continue to send them in whether you donate or not. But I will sometimes, just out of curiosity, and maybe it's a different email or whatever, so it's not for sure, but sometimes I will look up and say, oh, this person whose life I have revolutionized and saved, and they're happily married, and they've got kids, and they've got a raise, and, you know, all these wonderful things that philosophy has done for them, I wonder if they ever donated. Again, I don't mean to laugh, but it's like, what a wild disconnect. You know, man, you literally saved my life. $20? No. It's just wild. I mean, what's your life worth? It's kind of funny that way, right? Let's see here. I subscribed when I changed from constant high time preferences lifestyle choices. All right. We get Steph ad-free. Here's the thing too, right? This is the thing, right? So on YouTube, right, if you want to not watch ads, you pay them, what, $15 a month or whatever it is, right? It's the same thing with other places. If you want them ad-free, you have to pay. Now, if you think about this, I'll do a two-hour show. Now, normally in radio, a two-hour show would have half an hour of commercials, right? At least, right? So let's just make it half an hour, right? Half an hour. That's 20 minutes. I say 20 minutes of ads per show, right? Hour and a half, yeah, 20 minutes of ads or whatever. Right? You see this on the radio, hear this on the radio, right? So if you've listened to 2,000, let's just say you've listened to 1,000 hours of content, which is, you know, 500 shows or whatever, right? You've listened to 1,000 hours of content. I've saved you, right? 20,000 minutes divided by 60, 333 hours divided by 8-hour work days, almost a year's worth of work, 41 days of work, right? So a month and a half of work, month and a bit of work. So, you know, 41 days I've saved you in terms of it not having to deal with ads, right? It's the same thing, you know, if you listen to podcasts while you're going to sleep, the ad noises, the bumper noises, all of that, it's really loud and jarring and all of that, right? So if you've listened to 1,000 hours of my content, I've saved you 41 days of ads. Is that worth $50? It would seem to me that it is worth $50. And I mean, I do get, you know, hey man, I'd love to put ads and love to put ads in your show. And I've gotten these for years, like, you know, 10 emails a day of people who want to put stuff in my show. And it's like, nah, but you know, I'm kind of sensitive to the fact that, you know, people sobbing about their childhoods and it's like, you know, here's how to save gold, you know, whatever it is, right? So yeah, it's just wild, right? Even if you've listened to 100 hours of my content, I've saved you 4 days of ads, right? 4 days of your life, 4 work days of your life. It's pretty wild, right? It's pretty wild. Let's see here. Oh, Brigadier General blah, blah, blah. Yeah, that was funny. That was funny. I had a call-in show a while back. Any possible way I can get the audio? Or check in the subscriber section. If not, you can just email me. Let's see here. Is it irresponsible to let your kids run off and play without supervision? Would love to, but we live in a low-trust society. Well, I mean, statistically, kids are relatively safe these days. I can't tell you whether it is or is not. It depends upon your society, but kids are pretty resilient. Just make sure that they know what to do in situations of potential risk. If anything, we need supporters to donate to increase the advertising and awareness that the show continues on Locals and Telegram, but not putrid YouTube. Yeah. Let's see here. About 2 years ago, you mentioned investing in what you're interested in will make it more real and serious. Been supporting on two platforms since. It was a good way to put it. Yeah, so the basic argument is if you say you really value philosophy, but you don't want to kick in $20 a month, then your unconscious doesn't care about what you say. It cares about your resource allocation, right? So if you say you care about a woman, but you never call her and never go out with her, your unconscious is like, okay, well, we don't really care. Like, your unconscious is empirical. So if you want to get your unconscious behind what you do, then you need to allocate some resources to it. And again, it doesn't have to be money. It could be sharing the show with people. It could be sharing the ideas, right? But you have to take some risks. You have to invest some resources for your unconscious to think that you're serious about your belief system. Like, there are a lot of people who listen to the show for a long time, call in, and still have significant problems that have been addressed in many shows. And one of the reasons they have those problems is their unconscious hasn't really taken what they've done seriously because they've never invested any resources. So, all right, let's see here. We get Steph ad-free, worth considering that he's 100% donation funded. Somebody said, I had no idea. I'm a subscriber. I thought he was asking for suggestions on what he should do with the show as I suggested the old series of podcasts. He tells me to read his book. Wait, you had no idea that I was donation funded? I don't understand that. The first video of yours I ever watched was you responding to Jon Stewart's 19 Tough Questions for Libertarians. Yes, I've got some article reviews queued up, which I'll get to that. I think you will rise to popularity again from the ashes. Once more, free-thinking people start looking for real wisdom beyond the two-dimensional nonsense they find on the mainstream internet. Well, yes, and it's nature's and society's way of saying spend your daughter's last couple of years as a child with her rather than on the internet. Somebody said, I subbed when you did the 12-month deal. Used to follow in DLive and subbed that way before Locals. Loved the show for years back to the YouTube days. Thanks, Steph. I appreciate that. Thank you. I can give this to you guys, right? Thoughts on monkeypox? Just look at the WHO's recommendations, and that would be pretty key, right? A successful model on YouTube has been the game streaming while talking about topics. Perhaps once a fortnight you could try the same? Mm. Yeah, all right. Not on YouTube, obviously, but yes. I donated after I realized I listen to Steph way more than I watch movies, and I don't even watch TV. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. It's an interesting example of how so many normies want, quote, free, but willing to be exposed to hours of commercials, which in the USA are dreadful and patronizing. Well, I mean, you pay either way. You pay with your time and your annoyance and the interruptions. Can you imagine I'm in the middle of some wild monologue that's really powerful and that has to wait where the cut is? That's no good, right? Or if I insert the ads in a more manual fashion, then that's time I'm not spending doing research, doing shows, coming up with ideas and arguments and so on, right? You helped my life greatly, so I made sure to pay as if it was an appointment to a therapist. I truly appreciate your greatness. Thank you. That's very, very kind. I need to increase my donation. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. There's nothing like this in the world. One of the best things bringing peaceful parenting to the world. Thank you. Yes, I hate commercials so hard. They're so obnoxious. Imagine using YouTube or something with no ad block. Where your treasure is, there also your heart will be. Yeah, that's very true. That's very true. Freedomain.com/donate. Thank you for posting that. We're running a little bit low on time. Let's see here. I would love to see you do some live shows again. Yeah, I mean, I do enjoy public speaking very much. And there are places in the world that I could go and do that. But it's really tough to travel these days, of course. And North America, is, I would be concerned about exposing the audience to significant violence from the left, right? So just at 100, Steph, love you, brother, to the great white north. Thank you. That's very kind. I appreciate that. I donated for years to Steph and other dissident thinkers. They are taking the fire for us. Yeah. Are you ever going back to DLive? I liked the convenience of the platform. Yes, I will. I will go back to DLive and all of that. Your video on procrastination, right when you say you don't have to do anything, then an ad starts and you have to watch it. That would ruin your great speeches. Yeah, I mean, to me, there's genuine artistry in what it is that I do. And can you imagine, you know, halfway through Bohemian Rhapsody, you get an ad for hemorrhoid cream? I don't. No, I think when he means live shows, I think he's talking about live in front of people. Yeah, I love playing with the audience and working with the audience. Just wonderful. Do you ever regret becoming a philosopher? No. There are times when it has been harder and there's times when it's been easier. Like most things, there's times when it's more fun and there's times when it's less fun. But I don't regret it. I guess I wish that the topics that were the most volatile had been addressed by other people, because everybody wants, like, who wants to bell the cat, right? So I do wish that some of the topics that were more volatile had been addressed by other people and it didn't sort of all fall to me, so to speak. But knowing how important it was to address those topics, that was, you know, there's times where you want it to be a little bit easier than it is, but that is kind of the gig, right? I mean, it's like if you're a surgeon, right? There are times when you get tired of cutting people, but it's not like there's anybody else in the room who can do it. So, right. Maybe do shows on topics chosen by viewers. A weekly, monthly user suggestions poll, and the most popular choice you do a show on. That's interesting. Somebody says, I've been a long-term supporter. I started because it saved my life. Philosophy, I guess, this show. And I continue because it continues to save lives and create life. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Have I spoken about praxeology at length? I did a show many years ago with Prax Girl and the guy behind Prax Girl, and I have done shows on praxeology, just Prax Girl. There's a video somewhere around that. I believe your call-in shows are the most meaningful and powerful of all your content. They're so unique that I think they will continue to characterize your show. Yes, I think that's true, and that, again, is to the generosity and openness of the listeners, which is a beautiful thing to be a part of. Dude, you just keep on going, effing amazing. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. You know, one of the things that happens when you get really viciously attacked, and this happened very early on in my podcasting days, is, okay, well, they're just helping steal your resolve, right? Because it might, I could have gone back into the business world where I was making good money and got to travel the world and speak at conferences and manage people. And it was a great deal of fun for the most part and very enjoyable. But when you get hit that hard, you know, the cult leader stuff and all of that, it's like, okay, well, there's no real road back into business now, so I guess I'm going to have to really focus on this. I liked your abortion argument show. Yeah, that's just really, really great stuff up there in subscriber shows, right? Saving my girlfriend from her family, a call-in I did with a woman. Oh, this is a wild call-in. This is a boyfriend and a girlfriend, been together for quite a while, and how to save her from her family. And it's 2 hours and 43 because I do his side and then her side. I did a debate with a woman about abortion and dream analyses. My boyfriend is still married. That was quite a call-in. A debate I did on empiricism How to Forget About Being Short If You're a Man. My Father Is My Inner Demon. My Husband Has Not Proposed. My Husband Didn't Propose, and tortured about all of that kind of stuff. And yeah, just really, the call-in where the guy realized his girlfriend is in fact his mother. That was really quite something. So yeah, lots of stuff up there, and I hope that you will check it out. freedomain.locals.com. Did you post the 4-hour call-in yet? No, it's coming. What advantages does Christianity have over UPB? It's morality personified, and therefore it's more relatable for people. Do you still speak to Sticks, Hex, and Hammer? I don't know how to contact him. So if anybody has a way to contact him, I would like to obviously congratulate him on being a father, which is great. When you get interviewed, like the one a couple of days ago, and they say, "We miss you," I cringe a bit. He's right here. The only time I miss you is when you took time to write The Future. Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you. A more forceful way to increase donations would be to make all shows subscriber only. Yeah, but I do still want to get philosophy out to the world as a whole. So I like the podcast where the police turned up during the call. Yes. Yes. Just speak into your spoon at breakfast. Sticks will hear you. Clankers, right? I want to read your autobiography. I started one, actually. I've got a chapter or two in, but it's a little tough because the people in my life when I was younger are not... It's not their fault that I became famous and notorious and all that kind of stuff. So, let's see here. Thank you for having your philosophy lessons on your site. Loved those and learned more from them than my classes I took. And I love the book on UPB and the Art of the Argument book. Brilliant. Thank you for you. I appreciate that. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Very, very kind. How long do you plan on doing videos? Because it would be quite sad when it ends. But I do know, at least appreciate that it happened to begin with. I don't have any desire to stop. I do enjoy walking around more. Being in the studio is just standing for an hour and a half or 2 hours or whatever it is. So I do enjoy sort of walking around and moving around a little bit, standing and sitting. It helps. I'm really a big one. Nietzsche really helped me to understand how important it is to be moving when you're thinking. It is really good. So... and you know, I don't know, hit me with, do you watch, just let me know, do you watch the videos? We got another minute and a half, right? Do you watch all the way through, or do you just put it on in the background and do something else? Like, I'm not sure exactly how valuable the videos are. If anybody's watching a show for an hour and a half with me, you almost never watch. Yeah, I think most people just listen, right? The videos where you walk outside are great. Yeah. Have you ever considered walk and talk vids? I have done that. You watch all the way, mostly audio, listen, hang on every word. Yes. As much as possible, love the video component when I'm able to watch. Yeah. I watch 25% of the time. Are you concerned there would be no one functional and healthy enough for your daughter to marry? No, because I'm doing as much as possible to create functional and healthy people in the world, or at least help them. When are you going to do a throwback Steph talking philosophy in the car video? Oh, I don't know. I love it when you walk around and chat. I watch when I'm off work and listen at work. Yeah. Sure. All right. We're out of time tonight. Thank you, everyone, so much for dropping by. And lots of love from up here. I hope you're having a wonderful time, a wonderful day. Thank you for your interest in philosophy. It is a great joy and pleasure and privilege to be able to talk with you about this. Please check out my book. If you want to check out my novels, they're all free. JustPoorNovel.com, AlmostNovel.com, FDRURL.com/TGOA. And, of course, my new novel, The Future, My Atlas Shrugged, at freedomain.locals.com. Lots of love. Thanks, everyone, so much. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.